Open. We're going to continue our public hearings on the bottle bill. And just to remind folks, in case they weren't here last time, we have Senate Bill 481 before us. That is not the only bill related to expansion of the bottle bill or in some other way addressing recycling of bottles that the committee will have before it. But some of those are still in legislative council and hopefully will be here next week. We are going to end the committee at 4:25 today, and there are, as you can see by just looking over your shoulder, a lot of people that would like to testify, and I want to get as many folks in as we can. If we don't get through the whole list, and I was going to say, and you came from a long distance, but I don't know that anybody here did. It looks like you're all regulars in the building. But we will continue on Tuesday if we have overflow. And with that, Senator Johnson, why don't you come up and bring anybody that you want with you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my cast of thousands is now down to one. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for extending the courtesy of letting me testify. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state senator from District 16. And I come before you with a colleague to share, I think, a very innovative, interesting new program. And I hope that it is part of the galaxy of ideas that you and your colleagues on the committee entertain as this debate about the bottle bill moves forward. I know the bottle bill is a cherished institution in this building. My father was a state representative at the time that it passed, and it has come into the lore of Oregon and in the mind of Oregonians. As I said to some people that I was talking to the other day, if we look at a new way of doing business, it isn't necessarily an attack on our cherished bottle bill. It's a realization that with technology and new techniques, we can move into the next century with ideas that help increase recycling, which I think is something that we're all interested in doing, and perhaps diffuse some of the volatility around the two-bottle bill expand or not-two-bottle bill expand. And so to that end, I'm here today to talk about Recycle Bank. And I am going to turn to Mr. Gilliam, and then I'll have some concluding remarks about a potential pilot project.
Very good. Mr. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Gilliam. I represent the Northwest Grocery Association, which has about 1,120 retail outlets that handle bottles and cans in this state. Thank you today for the hearing opportunity and to come before you. Betsy Johnson has been a great leader for us on this kind of innovative idea that we're bringing forward. Well, we also want to thank Senator Berger and the Senate President for taking the action to bring this forward and opening up the discussion. We also want to thank Speaker Merkley for his comments yesterday about being innovative in how we look at the bottle bill. And we want to thank Representative Berger for her efforts to bring it forward in the spirit of her dad and bring this forward, too. We heard a lot of words last week about the war, the fight to get the bottle bill passed over a four-year time period. Although we oppose Senate Bill 481 as written, we come in peace.
But they carry a big club.
You can search me out. I don't have any clubs, no weapons today. We come here because we want to be at the table. We think that I want to be real clear where our industry is on this issue, and I hope it doesn't come too much surprise, but saying no to the bottle bill expansion is not enough. We believe that we have to bring a yes to the table. We have to bring something else. Otherwise, we're going to be sitting here 10 years from now talking about the same thing with the same problems. And our common goals of trying to reduce the landfilling, increase recycling, and attack litter problems are just going to be kind of stagnant, and we don't want to see that happen. So we're committed to coming to a solution here and offering some alternatives. The alternatives that we brought to the table, and Senator Johnson spoke of, is this Recycle Bank concept. It's to look at recycling as a comprehensive piece of recycling. Beverage containers are about 5% of the waste stream. That's if you include wine and liquor, all non-carbonated beverages, and the traditional carbonated beverages that are in the bottle bill today. So you're only looking at a maximum of about 5% of the waste stream. What Recycle Bank does is look at 100% of the waste stream and try to get a maximum amount of the recyclables out of that waste stream and into recycling streams rather than in landfills. And that's a huge issue for us as Oregonians because we don't have that much space left. Recycle Bank works at this. It instead of focusing on just one particular type of recyclable, it looks at how you recycle all your recycles in your recyclables in your home. It provides a cart that you'd be familiar with, one that looks like one you may use today, your garbage cart or even a recycling cart. The concept is to have everything in one cart. That'll be an issue here. We're going to need to work through some details of glass as it mixes with fiber because our paper plants and recycling plants can't handle that. But the concept is that you roll your cart out to the curb after putting your recycles in. The truck picks it up. It weighs it. And in that cart is a embedded barcode. The barcode then records your account number, the residence, and how much you recycled by weight. You then are done. No more trips to the store, no more trips anyplace else. You don't have to go to a redemption center or anything else. You are done as a consumer, other than to go online, look up at your account number on recyclebank.com, and see how much money you made. Recycle Bank will pay you up to $400 a year, $33 a month, to recycle. You will get that compensation burst through. And if you look in the folders I gave you, right in the center is a small list of the retailers who will pay you to recycle. Starbucks, Whole Foods, Kinko's, FedEx, a variety of them. And then you say, I want $35 on my Starbucks card. And 2 days later, you have a Starbucks card in your hand, and you get $35 for recycling. It provides that incentive. And it's working very well in other areas of the country, particularly the East Coast. And we want to bring that idea here to the West Coast. We'd be a pioneer in this on the West Coast to put that idea right here in Oregon. And we think that actually is a better approach and concept in terms of our common goals of increasing recycling without coming up with some of the problems that the bottle bill expansion comes to. You're going to hear more about that today. There's many retailers here to talk to you about the mechanics that of the bottle bill and what really wasn't. You just couldn't foresee it. When the bottle bill is passed, it's not anybody's fault. It's not anybody's, you know, strategy to hurt the retailer. It's just the facts of what it takes to do it through a retail outlet.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, when I first heard about Recycle Bank, what intrigued me was a way to turn your garbage into lattes. I thought this has got to be the most innovative incentive-based recycling program. And in further conversations, I had proposed perhaps trying a pilot in one community. I had offered Astoria, a community that I'm privileged to represent and a community I know a great deal about. It seemed to offer a unique beta test site for a number of reasons. First of all, the mayor is a Pepsi dealer. Second of all, a new county commissioner runs the Costco. They have a very, very innovative young city manager who has pioneered all sorts of interesting housing programs in Astoria. He would be the kind of city bureaucrat that would be open and receptive to this kind of new thinking. It is a contained community with a very civic-minded refuse company, and it seemed to be an ideal test spot to try a program like this. On further reflection, it became clear that maybe having a second site, other side of the mountains, different climate, different, lots of things different, drove us to the conclusion that maybe Bend would make a second good test site to see if Recycle Bank would prove out to be successful. It is my hope that if we could try pilot projects and see if Recycle Bank has the promise that it holds forth, that maybe then we could figure out a way to increase recycling and turn down the volume in this contentious argument about the bottle bill. So I come before you today to provide, I think, really the first public introduction of Recycle Bank. We've been around visiting with people to help introduce it, but this is its really first public rollout, and to suggest that it might be one of the tools in the committee's toolbox as you assemble and evaluate the various bottle bills that have come forward. And I just would commend it for your consideration. We'll be looking for some funding out of this legislature to see if we can run these two test sites with the idea of increasing the amount of recycling and being really the first West Coast operation for Recycle Bank. So with that, I think we'd handle any questions that you would have for us, and then we'd retreat and let you get to your list.
Senator Pozanski.
Thank you. Joe, probably for you, curbside. Not everyone has curbside. I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are in Lane County. We're part of the district I represent. I know that we are self-haulers. I think it's around 25%, and I'm not sure if anyone's looked as to what that would mean as to this actually carrying forward. and also for us non-coffee drinkers, what would we get out of it if we actually became a part of the process and had curbside service?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, it is focused on curbside. There's several stages that Recycle Bank wants to go into. Their first foray is into residential homes that do have curbside. Their next target is multifamily housing. That presents some of a challenge in terms of how the concept works, but they're working on different containers that might be able to be used where you'd punch in your code or slide a card in, you'd get your weight, it would go in and go that way, and then you'd get your credits, even though you'd be using a common bin to dispose of your waste or your recyclables. The next piece would be going into the business and commercial, and they're not sure how that connects in terms of the kind of financial incentives. They're really more pertain to that household, private resident that really stimulates them. To the second question, for those of you that don't drink coffee, I'm an iced tea addict, so I go to Starbucks every morning, so I think I picked on that one. Actually, there's a variety of things you can do with Recycle Bank. There's FedEx Kinko's, it's a non-food item. Whole Foods is in there. They give $10 if you have a $50 purchase or better. So if you wanted to go out and buy a microbrew at Whole Foods and some food and some organic vegetables, you'd be able to go do that there and get $10
if
out.
We had Whole Foods in our
get him
community.
Where he lives. Yeah. If we get a sportswear company to sign on, you get spandex biking gear and pray for your garments. That's the deal.
There we go.
And they are talking with Nike right now, actually, to be part of that. So local companies also, I should add, can be part of this. So it could be Fred's Hardware Store. And in addition to that, they started in one community I know back in on East Coast. They set up a charitable giving. So some of the marketing dollars that the retailers are putting up can be used to give to a school or charitable giving. So, kind of in my vision out there, you're looking at going to Dornbecker's and others that are kind of homegrown Oregon ideas and saying, can we get them on the list? Can we put them on the list?
If I could just follow up, the one thing I know in the East Coast, especially part of the cities that are part of this program, are much more dense. We probably don't have individuals such as ourselves and others that choose to be self-haulers as a conscious way of managing what we do. And so that's the one part I would ask for you to consider for those private residential consumers. How do they get put into the system? And it would seem like you'd have to have something like at we have the transfer stations that are used now for landfill use, and you'd have some type of ability to go there and do your recycling. But I'm wondering if you could check to see back on the East Coast or other places, how have they accommodated those who choose not to have curbside garbage service?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I will ask him, and we should have an opportunity. I'm going to have hopefully the founder of Recycle Bank out here in the next 2 weeks or so, or a representative of the company, so they can answer questions like that are kind of detailed mechanical ones. But I will ask for you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Betsy, I think a little honesty here needs to be brought forward. You and I both know when you and I are not talking about lattes, we're talking about Merlot.
There you go.
Okay. The question I have is, you mentioned several groups that are into the program as far as selling the products. How broad a base can you make this, or has been made in other areas? We have a lot of stuff to recycle. Many of us take them to recycling transfer stations, some out curbside, but what actually goes into those barrels and those bags? I mean, what's important is how broad that becomes to really get people to get involved. Two or three things being sort of counted is great, but how broad can you make it? How broad have you made it back east?
I'm going to give you the joking answer to start out with and then turn to Joe for the serious one. When I first saw this, I was really astounded. You put your trash out in the container, and the truck comes and weighs it and gives you this credit. I was trying to figure out how you don't have the cut-up body of your first husband in the bottom of the bin, and you're actually turning that into lattes someplace. Yeah. I think the good news about Recycle Bank
is... You have to dig them up out of the backyard first and then...
The good news about Recycle Bank is that this is technology that we would be evolving with. It really is amazing the amount of the sort that can occur. We would need some work right now in our separating sites, just because Oregon hasn't had the stream of recycles that's able to be dealt with in these MRFAs very well. Hopefully this would be the incentive to boost us to a new level of recycling expertise. All kinds of technology, just as Joe described, the multi-unit, the multi-apartment facilities, how with technology you can sort those out. This would be a chance, I think, for us to grow with Recycle Bank as they figure out new and better ways to employ technology in managing this refuse stream.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I love being straight man. This is good. We're only limited by how innovative we want to be. On the East Coast, particularly in Philadelphia where it started, the recycling was pretty poor. And so the idea of just getting the household containers from your grocery and things like that in was kind of a big step. I think it's wide open in terms of how we want to describe it. If the MRF, and you have to talk to the folks who run these MRFs, the people who sort out the recyclables, if they could accommodate it on a truck and it could be weighed in a fashion, I mean, we could come up with anything. And I think that's right. You're kind of going right where we're going is
we're hoping to
if we're just going to focus on a water bottle, we're not going to get much for the amount of money we're going to put in the system. But if you create a system that you can get all the containers, and then if you could add a computer screen or a TV or any of the other kind of recyclables that are becoming a problem, household waste, which is a big issue, if the MRFs could handle it, I think we could modify Recycle Bank to accommodate any of it.
Thank you.
Mr. Gilliam, you had 9 different folks signed up underneath your name. I'm guessing those are the retailers that you brought?
Retailers and one manufacturer. We have right. We have two or three from pretty far distance.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take Representative Berger next, and if you can tell me, if you know off the top of your head.
Here.
You're just here to watch? Okay, then we won't do that. Tell me who came from the distance, though, because I think what I'm going to do is break them up so some of the other folks have the ability to testify today, too.
Sure.
I'm going to excuse myself, Mr. Chair. I came from the third floor. I'm going.
Senator, thank you very much.
What am I going to do for Steve? Thank you.
And you're on your own.
Steve Emery from Earth 2.0.
All right.
And Chuck McKay with McKay Family Markets.
All right.
Oh, and Mike Reed from Winco.
Very good, then. Thanks, Mr. Gilliam. And the three names that he just mentioned, why don't you all three come up together right now? And in any order you wish, just state your name for the record and go right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Emery. I'm the owner of Earth2O Bottled Water Company located in Central Oregon. And thanks for putting me at the front here so I can get over the mountain. When I heard about the bottle bill, the expansion of it, I had no problem. Didn't understand what the big deal would be for it until I started looking more into it and actually felt a financial impact immediately when the discussions began. The pause for concern came from, first off, how fragmented our industry is. We are the largest producer in the state of Oregon. We have a massive 6 share. The largest bottled water company sold at retail has a 9 share. Private label accounts for 15. That's just at retail. Doesn't account for bottled water sold in schools, sold in hospitals, given away by the Red Cross. Concerned Women for America of Oregon. All coming in, 90% of all water sold in the state of Oregon comes in from outside the state of Oregon. And so my question is how can we make sure that the playing field's level for all of us? Because if the burden of reporting is put on a local company, because we have to create specific niches in the marketplace, we can't go head-to-head with Nestle, Pepsi, and Coke on a daily basis and carve out their market share. We don't have the efficiencies to produce as cheap as they can. So we're going after car lots, schools, fundraising committees, things such as that. If we turn around and look at them and say, we're going to increase your costs by almost 100%, most likely they're going to walk away from that. We had $750,000 worth of contracts that just got put on hold because they want to see what happens on this bill. For a company our size, that's significant. It's very significant. If you want to go off record sometime privately, I can share who those companies are, and you can contact them to verify it. I don't want to share with our competitors who we're doing business with. So the question that needs to be addressed is, because we don't have a franchise law like the beer and the carbonated soft drinks do, where there's a controlling mechanism to have reporting to ensure that the water companies are participating in demanding that deposit be paid, how are we going to enforce it for all these outside state companies? Secondly, this bottle produced by Niagara costs between 5 and 7 cents a bottle. If we're looking at 13 cents, we're opening up ourselves for a lot of fraud coming into the state just for the bottle. There's more margin in recycling bottles than there is in actually bottling the water. Those are our largest issues. It does have an impact on our company. It does open itself up for fraud, and unless we have an enforcement division for all the out-of-state companies, we need to come up with a mechanism to address it.
Very good. Why don't we just do all three of you, and then we'll open it up for questions.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Reed, Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs for Winco Foods. We're headquartered in Boise, Idaho. Although much of our business is done in this state, we have 16 stores, 2 distribution facilities in the state of Oregon. Maybe what I can do, I know some of my companions from other companies are going to go into more detail than I, but I could perhaps set the stage for a few of the key issues from the standpoint of a retailer that's dealing with the bottle bill today and contemplating the expansion that this bill would introduce to the state. We did an average of several of our stores in the state, and just to give you an idea of some of the numbers, we're currently dealing with approximately 354,000 cans, bottles, and so forth per store per month, which works out to about $4.3 million per year per store. With 16 stores, that's about 16 or 68 million containers annually under the bottle bill as it stands today. Our internal costs for that, in terms of the money that we pay for the reverse vending machines, the space that we allocate for those machines, and the cost of the labor that goes into servicing the machines, emptying the bins, and so forth and so on, runs us $17,375 per month per store. That's $208,000 and change per year, and about $3.4 million for our 16 stores annually. That's just based on the current state of the bill. Now, I would submit to you, people in the state of Oregon don't think about that cost when they think about the bottle bill. That's essentially a hidden charge to them. We can't absorb that. We're not paid anything for that. So we raise our prices roughly $3.5 million a year in our 16 stores so that we can make ourselves whole on the cost to accommodate the present bottle bill. If we expand it, the cost, the number of containers certainly is going to expand exponentially. We don't have the space. We simply don't have the space. Using reverse vending machines has made it more convenient, somewhat less messy, but you'll hear later some of our sanitation and health care concerns. And again, this is where people expect to buy safe, clean, wholesome food. That's what we're trying to do. And yet we're bringing vermin, filth, unimaginable things back into the store every day. If we expand that, particularly to items that don't go into the reverse vending machines, we've got to create more space for storage, more space for transport. It makes the problem significantly worse. Let me just give you an idea of what the addition of one bottled water item would do to our chain. Our most significant bottled water product is what we call Northwest Water. We sell it in a 24-pack in the stores. If just that product were included in the bottle bill, our number of containers per year would expand by 24 million containers. So it would be more than a third of our present volume with just that one item. That item probably represents somewhere between 12 and 15% of the total volume of new containers that are contemplated by this bill. I didn't extrapolate the number, but I think you get the picture. We just simply don't have the ability to handle that. I don't know what we'd do. We don't have the space in the stores. Our stores now can't handle our merchandising programs that we build for our newer stores because many of the stores in Oregon are somewhat smaller. So we're already limited in what we can do, and we simply don't have the space. So we're wondering, how do we accommodate that? We can't increase the size of the store without a lot of permitting and cost, and we might violate our parking ratios. A number of other issues. We can't really carve it out of the inside of the store because then we're taking away merchandising space from the product we sell, seriously impacting our business. So we're really caught here. and we think there are better alternatives. We would endorse Senator Johnson and the comments of Joe Gilliam with regard to Recycle Bank. Thank you.
Mr. McKay?
Mr. Chair, fellow committee members, my name is Chuck McKay, McKay's Markets, Coos Bay, Oregon, home of Senator Verger. I have a brief comment here about storage. We are at our maximum right now. We will have to move into our retail space to accommodate additional containers. That's all I have to say.
Okay, committee? Nothing. Well, thank you all for coming, flying and maybe driving over a snowy mountain range on the way back. I don't know. We appreciate you getting here. And also gave you a little bit more time than maybe some others because you did have a longer trip in getting here. But in order to get through everybody today, maybe we want to keep down to about 3 minutes per testimony for the rest of the folks that are coming up. And next, Bridget Flanagan and Alex Kuehler and Betty Patton. Is it Kuehler? Sorry. Alex Kuehler. Thank you, Senator Prozanski.
I know him from his early days at Bring Recycling.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Ms. Flanagan, would you like to go first?
I've sat in the middle, so I wouldn't have to. good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bridget Flanagan. I'm Director of Public Affairs for Safeway in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Our headquarters are in Clackamas, Oregon. We've operated stores in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest since the early 1920s, and today we operate over 1,800 stores throughout the United States and Canada. Closer to home, we operate 118 stores. Of those, 101 are in Oregon, and the balance, or 17, are in Southwest Washington. And we're proud to be Oregon's fourth largest employer. I'm here with my fellow grocers to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 481, which would expand the bottle bill, among other things. In the 36 years since the bottle bill was enacted, it has served as model legislation for several states. It's legislation we can be proud of. However, any law that's three decades old or more probably needs a tune-up to accommodate changes in our society. I think the food industry in general and grocers specifically have expended numerous resources and taken on a significant financial burden to accommodate the legal requirements of the bill. And grocers have worked very hard to make the redemption of bottles and cans a fast, easy, and efficient part of your grocery shopping trip. I know within my company, Safeway's worked very, very hard to incorporate bottle and can redemption into our service culture. And for a highly service-oriented industry like retail grocery, service is one of the most important commodities that we can offer you as our shoppers. However, we've been impacted by several trends recently. The buying habits, first and foremost, of consumers have changed dramatically over the last three decades. People simply purchase more and consume more carbonated beverages than they did even 20 or 10 years ago. Secondly, with that increased amount of containers being purchased and redeemed, there's been an increased amount of filth and contamination that's being brought back into our stores when those empty containers are being redeemed. And I have to tell you, there are a few things that scare a grocer more than filth and garbage being brought back into the store. We can control what goes on inside our stores, but it's very difficult, if not impossible, to control what's being brought into our stores from the outside, whether it's on the containers or in them. Of Safeway's 101 stores in Oregon, 91 of those have what we call reverse vending machines, or RVMs, to help with that redemption process. When those machines reach their capacity, they just simply stop working until the clerk can come and empty the container. Most of the times, that employee has to solicit the help of another employee because the weight of the crushed glass is just simply huge. Once the machines are emptied and filled with a new liner, then they can be placed back into service. We also have 10 stores that don't have RVMs, and those stores, of course, have to count the containers by hand, provide a voucher to the consumer so they can get their deposit back. We take great pride in the cleanliness of our stores and, of course, the visual aesthetics, but the introduction of the RVM machines in the buildings is just a continual source of frustration for us. Consumers, I'm the one that drew the lucky straw to tell you what comes back in those containers. Lucky me, here I go.
Can I be excused?
No, you have to say.
You're the only doctor on the dais. You're used to this kind of thing.
Consumers bring back a lot of surprises, a wide variety of contaminants inside, and it's including but not limited to chewing tobacco, chewing spit, urine, bugs, hypodermic needles, used, of course, food, dirt, rocks, bolts, screws, nails, marbles, gum, blood, and my favorite, used feminine hygiene products. These contaminants cause a lot of problems, including we have to handle and clean the materials from the machines and the surrounding area. We also have to repair the damaged equipment when these foreign objects and garbage are shoved into the RVMs. And when consumers don't clean the containers or empty them out before returning them to the store, the syrup and the alcohol residue can spill out into the standing area and, of course, splash on the face of the machines. And this is obviously an attractant for bugs, flies, bees, and vermin. And it causes the area to appear unsightly, to say the least. We provide extensive and consistent cleaning of the area, but with the volume of containers being processed and the condition they return to our store in, we can't always, it pains us to say this, but we can't always maintain a clean container redemption area. Because once those containers are full, employees have to empty it and haul the full bins through the store to the back room, where it's poured into large bins and stacked into our already overflowing back rooms until it can be picked up. And I suggest that there should be few things that scare you, whether you're a legislator or a consumer, more than dirt, germs, and contaminants being brought into the same store that handles your family's food. And last, redeeming containers has almost become a secondary business for us, a business that was mandated by the state, and of course, as we all know, it's an unfunded mandate. Having said that, of course, we want to continue doing our part to guarantee the continued success of the bottle bill, but we really just want to continue doing our main business, which is selling grocers. We don't want to be recyclers. We don't want to be garbage collectors. And I have just a few quick numbers, because I suspect we have the biggest volume of containers just because we have...
Do go ahead and make them quick, just so we make sure everybody else has a chance to testify.
I'm in PR. What do you expect? I'm sorry. I'm blabbing here. Last year, 2006, the 101 Safeway stores in Oregon redeemed over 261 million containers. An average Safeway store redeems 2.9 million containers. But we have a number of stores along the border, and they have huge, huge numbers. For example, Jansen Beach, located on the I-5 corridor, redeems 4.1 million containers a year, or 41% more than our average. A Rose City store, which is at the intersection of Sandy and Fremont in Portland, which is near I-205, redeems 4.1 million. And our Dalles store, which, of course, is just across the river from the Columbia and getting a lot of traffic, tourist traffic, 4.6 million, or 58% more than our average. We also redeem more than 25% more than we sell. We also have employee costs, equipment and maintenance leasing costs, as well as energy, that adds an additional $4.5 million to our cost just to do this, not to mention an extra $1 million just to help build the redemption areas. If you increase the bottle bill to include just the waters, that would translate, as our numbers show, an additional 340 million more containers coming back just to Safeway. And I will close that if any of you... Well, I'd like to ask you a question. How many of you have spent any time looking around what goes on in the bottle and can redemption area? I know Senator Johnson has, and she was greatly affected by the experience, and we thank her for introducing the legislation on the recycle bank concept, and we support that concept and thank the senator for that. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for taking the opportunity to hear me today, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I wanted to let folks that are having to stand know, too, that we have a overflow room in hearing room C with the television in there if you want to take advantage of that. Mr. Kyler?
Thank you, Chair Vakin, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alex Kyler. I'm the immediate past chair of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. I've been in the recycling industry for the last 20 years in Oregon. I was born in a bottle bill state, and I spent my entire life in bottle bill states. I think it had a great deal to do with the career choice that I embarked upon, And as you heard in the last hearing, there were a number of people who spoke to the ethic that this kind of law puts instills in its residents. And I think I'm a kind of a walking example of that. But the association, to my testimony, the Association of Oregon Recyclers was founded in 1977 as a trade association representing the interests of, at that time, the nascent recycling industry in Oregon. Today, the association boasts 300 members and is seen as a gathering place for an extremely diverse membership. We've got individual members, local, regional, and state government members, and private material handling firms that range from collectors to processors to end users. Our member interests range from baling twine and agricultural plastic discard recyclers to electronic scrap brokers to multinational paper companies and from extremely large to extremely small garbage haulers. A theme runs across our membership, which is a deep commitment to the conservation of materials and the satisfaction of adding value to materials previously considered waste. Our membership understands that for recycling to be effective, two things matter. Quantity and quality. Hold a conversation with any recycler and you'll soon hear the term contamination. Compost invaded by plastic, paper invaded by glass, wood invaded by paint or chemical treatment, glass invaded by ceramics and stones. The list goes on and on. In terms of the issue before the committee, our association knows of no other model for beverage container recycling which delivers both the quality and the quantity of beverage containers for recycling that deposit systems do. Other material-specific recycling associations also speak to the quantity and quality issue. And I footnoted a couple, the Glass Packaging Institute and the Association of Post-Consumer Plastics Recyclers. Department of Environmental Quality staff testified before this committee on Tuesday regarding the problems associated with the processing of recyclables collected under commingled collection systems. While that system has benefited Oregon communities due to its very low-cost collection methodology, challenges remain in sortation of these materials, and the cost shifting associated with this methodology has been well documented. I'd like to recognize the improvements in equipment design and utilization that are being implemented by Oregon Material Recovery Facilities as we speak, and recognize that local governments have mostly required that glass collection remain separated from other materials for this very reason. However, beverage containers by their very nature are consumed on the go, and in most of these applications there is no recycling opportunity. The association has held sessions at our annual conference where we've invited speakers in from around the world to discuss container redemption systems, learning about programs from places as diverse as New Zealand, Australia, Germany, and Canada. In 2004 and 2005, we dug into Oregon park and roadside litter in Oregon to examine the makeup of beverage containers in the litter. Betty Patton, our resource director, is going to speak to that study. And just this past December, we sponsored a special day-long forum here in Salem about container redemption systems with invited speakers from British Columbia, Alberta, and California. We've tried extremely hard to hold a stakeholder forum on this issue in the preparation of this legislative session. If you'll see what we refer to as the assessment in your packet today, you'll notice we hired Portland State University's Oregon Consensus Program in 2005 in an effort to bring all the stakeholders to the table in order to get through this issue with the help of professional mediation. That effort was unsuccessful. Today we are here before you today to offer our expertise on this issue and to advocate for Senate Bill 634, a bill we have had significant input on. This bill lays out five areas which we believe are required of any discussion about bottle bill modernization. Number one, expand the definition of beverage container to include the beverage containers found in today's marketplace and create a procedure whereby new containers can be added into the system if recycling rates for those containers are below a determined threshold. Number two, increase the deposit level to create additional incentive to return containers and to reflect the inflation that has occurred since the bill was initially signed into law. Number three, create an oversight body that has authority to write rules and to ensure that Oregonians have convenient recycling opportunities. Give the Bottle Bill Board, that's what we call it, this third-party organization, the flexibility to contract administrative services to a private entity as that expertise is currently available in Oregon today. Number four, ensure convenient redemption centers that accept all containers covered under the law so that consumers may travel to one location to redeem all their beverage containers. Allow individual retailers to become licensed as redemption centers only if they desire to do so. and require, the last element, number five, require traceability standards that ensure non-Oregon containers are no longer redeemed in Oregon. This is a very important piece to make this law function properly, is how do you resist the flood of materials that comes over, especially from Vancouver. Senate Bill 634 attempts to insert the elements of what we call product stewardship into law. Product stewardship involves a shared responsibility for end-of-life disposal along all parties in the supply chain. There are other examples of this that you may have seen. They include the recovery and recycling of carpet, paint, fishing line, batteries, consumer electronics, fluorescent lighting, vehicle batteries and tires, hazardous wastes, pallets, and other materials. Each party plays a role, and signals are sent to manufacturers regarding product design and material choices in order to ease end-of-life recycling and thus reduce costs along the supply chain. We look forward to serving on your work group and look forward to assisting the 74th Legislative Assembly in passing a modernized bottle bill. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Patton. Why don't you go first? And since the two of you, I think, came together, as long as you have new information and not something repetitive, that would be terrific.
I do, and I will be fast. Short, I guess. My name is Betty Patton, and I am the Resource Director for the Association of Oregon Recyclers, and our offices are in Portland, Oregon. As Alex had mentioned, our membership is quite diverse, and annually at our member meeting, we poll our members, and for as many years as I can remember, the top policy priority of our membership has been modernization of our bottle bill. I only have about 14 years of experience with that, not a lifetime like Alex does. But since that has been a dominant priority for our membership, we have pursued information to substantiate that desire. One of the processes that we did is in 2004, we implemented a litter study. I could compare notes on icky lists of things, but I won't. To cut to the chase, we tried to make a statistically accurate litter study as possible by collecting things from beaches, from roads, both at, non-interstate roads, and from parks, and we spread them out geographically, whereas the coast, Portland, Salem, and Eugene. And this also incorporated a lot of volunteer assistance from ODOT and SOLVE, and we thank them very much. During this process, we found out of the over 12,000 pounds of litter that our volunteers and members sorted, about 14.6% of it by weight was beverage containers. And if you think that more and more plastic is being used in beverage containers, that 14.6% by weight represents a lot of containers. Well, it turns out that after we counted, weighed, sorted, all that stuff, with all the litter that we had, all of these containers that we had, it was twice as likely to litter a non-deposit beverage as it was a deposit beverage. And let me clarify the fact that those beverage containers that we counted did not include the paper cups with the plastic lids and the straws sticking out of them. We only counted those that were sealed containers sold as is. So the litter study was quite obvious to us and quite an informative list of statistics for our study. So that and many other of our documents and literature is available on AOR's website. Thank you all very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much. Our next panel includes... it looks like we're going to have Randy Tucker, Lisa Amato, and Paul Romaine. And Randy, we're going to let you start off, and as the chair requested, we're going to ask you if you can limit your testimony to about 3 minutes and try not to be redundant on what else has already been said. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be short and at the very same time, I'll also be tall. I am not going to be nearly as long as I usually am when I come to testify. Randy Tucker, for the record, Metro Legislative Affairs Manager. As you know, Metro is the regional government of the Portland metropolitan area, and among our major responsibilities is the management of the region's solid waste system. As part of that responsibility, we seek opportunities to divert the recyclable materials from the waste stream. We've achieved a 59% recycling rate in the region, but that still falls short of the goal that's in Oregon statutes of 64% by the year 2009. So anything we can do to keep discarded material from having to be shipped up the gorge to Arlington and landfilled, we want to do. And so I'm just going to pretty much let the written testimony that I've submitted on behalf of our solid waste department speak for itself. Beyond that, I just would like to say every little bit counts. We support the expansion of the bottle bill. And then the one thing that is noted in the testimony that I was going to mention has essentially been mentioned by Alex Kyler, and that's the contamination issue. So I just draw your attention to that portion of the written testimony. The more glass and plastic we can remove from the curbside program through including it in the bottle bill, the better off we are in terms of being able to recycle the material that is picked up at the curbside. And that information is described in the written testimony there. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But I also have a meeting at 4 o'clock. If you don't, I'll excuse myself.
As far as I'm concerned, you're excused for being as short as you were.
Less than 3 minutes.
Lisa, if you'll go ahead and give us your name and testimony, it would be great.
Randy Tucker gets a gold star for the day. I heard the less than 3 minutes, doesn't he? Applause would be appropriate.
Mr. Chairman and committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity. My name is Lisa Adato, and I'm from the Oregon Business Association, and we support a modernization of the bottle bill. The Oregon Business Association is a mainstream business group made up of businesses from around the state of all different sorts. I mean, we have farmers, we have lawyers, we have developers, we have recyclers, we have people from the food and wine business, all different kinds of businesses. So we don't really have a dog in this fight, so to speak, but we do. And that's what I'd like to talk to you about, why a mainstream business group like ours is supporting the bottle bill. What is the business case? Why is the business group taking a lead in this? Recently there was a summit, the Oregon Business Summit, that brought almost 1,000 business leaders from around the state. And that summit adopted the Oregon Business Plan, which included a strategy for Oregon focused on sustainability as a competitive advantage for Oregon. And we should remember that the original bottle bill made Oregon famous, put Oregon on the map. And Oregon has adopted a continuation, really, from that day to this day of making sustainability a central focus of ours. And for me, as I look at our business members, that's very, very real. I know of a number of businesses who have moved to Oregon because of our focus on sustainability. We're attracting major conferences and a huge amount of business activity. So the Oregon Business Association is looking at the long view. What will create a positive business climate and what will create prosperity and our ability to thrive here in Oregon? We support the bottle bill because we believe that it's a component of sustainability. It will enhance Oregon's reputation as a leader. It will increase our ability to attract talented and creative workers and businesses in Oregon. It will add to our natural beauty, and that helps attract people to Oregon. It will increase the quality of recycled product, and we believe that product stewardship is an important component of business practices. And it will create recycling jobs and new direct business opportunities. On the implementation side, we as a business group, we want to remind ourselves to be practical. And for that reason, we are very sympathetic to the issues raised by the groceries and by others. And we would like to, we haven't gotten down into the details of how this should be implemented, but we'd like to urge you to think about, be open to taking materials out of the grocery stores, looking at other kinds of depots. Pilot projects that look at new technologies are excellent. So we, in terms of implementation, we don't have a specific recommendation, but we'd like to be involved and we'd like to see this leadership continue for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Romaine?
Everybody's abandoning me.
I could, if you're lonely, I could call some more people up for you.
You can call Fletcher up. He's coming up after me. That's fine. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. We have been around from the beginning in this process with the bottle bill, and we and the grocers have made it work. And we ask you to think about the system before you go about thinking about expansion. What happens is the bottle bill works because of the system. You heard Steve Emery earlier, who has a water company, the largest in Oregon, say that basically the franchise territories, the territory is what makes the bottle bill work, whether you like that or not. What happened when the bottle bill came into inception, the two kinds of products that were put into it were already distributed in exclusive territories. That was beer and soft drinks. And it was a relatively, I say relatively, easy transition. It cost a lot of money, but it was a relatively easy, from a system setup, a relatively easy transition. Water is not distributed in exclusive territories. There are thousands, it seems like, of people manufacturing or whatever you do with water today. Seems like the stupidest thing in the world to have in a state like Oregon, but it's there. The cost of the system is very important, and I refer you to the two bills that changed the system, 481 and the other one, which is 634. Both of them have an additional cost factor in them. What they say to you is that the recyclers will basically keep the scrap, keep the unredeemed, and add a handling fee. If you take the 1 billion containers that are currently going through the system, that means they understand that the current system costs somewhere between $30 million and $35 million to run the system. Now, we believe it costs more than that. Some of the redemption rates that you're hearing. When DEQ presents redemption rates to you, they are probably accurate as far as what is in a landfill, because that's what they're counting. They go through and dumpster dive or whatever they do, and they count bottles and cans and they extrapolate it out. And the value of those containers may be what they say it is. We have no dispute with that. For a distributor, the redemption amount is how much did you collect through the year and how much did you pay out, and what is the difference? If it's you pay out more, it's a bad thing. If you pay out less, it can be a good thing. Mr. Fletcher, who runs container recovery, will be able to answer more specifics on that in a little bit here. The most important thing when you consider any of the things you're talking about with the bottle bill, the 10-cent deposit is going to kill you under the current system. What happens is you have a huge amount of cross-border traffic. You heard the Safeway representative talking about the amount that they get. We have similar kind of horror stories. The amount of traffic that comes across from Washington State, from California, from Idaho is very large, especially today when the value of scrap, or actually in days when the value of scrap is low, they come across. When value of scrap is high, like it is today, you'll get less redemption from out of state. But when the value of scrap drops, people bring the stuff across. And there's really no way today to track that stuff. So what we ask you to do before you go forward on any of these is think through the system. And if you're going to add something to this bottle bill or change something, please consider that the system is what makes it work. And if you mess up the system, you're going to mess up the bottle bill. Thank you.
Committee? Nothing. Thank you, Mr. Romaine. And John Fletcher, Jeff Murray, and Eric Forrest. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Vakian and other members of the committee. My name is John Fletcher. I am president of Container Recovery. Print was formed in 1987 by distributors as a cooperative corporation to make collection and the recycling of empty beverage containers more efficient. As I testify, it may sound that I'm opposed to any changes in the bottle bill. Rather, my concerns are that many of the changes under consideration carry consequences that would be adverse to the bottle bill unless those consequences are fully understood and addressed. I would also like to say that most of you are aware that over the years, the distributors and bottlers have spent millions in anti-expansion campaigns. Please remember, when you hear this, that the distributors and the bottlers are making a fortune off of the bottle bill. I know these guys pretty well, and I can tell you, I can't imagine this group fighting anything that's allegedly profitable. The reason for Crink was twofold. Our retail customers were putting a lot of pressure on individual wholesalers to find a better way to clean out their stores. Wholesalers recognize and bottlers recognize that not only do they need to find a more efficient system, but also a better way to account for nearly $22.5 million in annual deposits before all that was being done by estimating. Currently, Crink operates approximately 1,100 retail grocery outlets, all in Multnomah, Clackamas, from Washington County, from parts of Marion, Yamhill, and Columbia. We do not service restaurants or other establishments that serve food on-premise. Distributors and bottlers service that type of business and incur those costs. Since 1990, the distributors and bottlers are paid in excess of $108 million in fees to operate Crink. This averages $6.3 million a year. This does not include $3.9 million invested in plant equipment and over $13 million invested in reverse vending machines. And that's only for approximately 50% of the state's volume. Add over 100 employees with an average wage of $13 per hour, not including benefits and management salaries. Crink services approximately 257 retailers per day on average, which requires over 60 semi-trailer loads of product every day. I mention the above only to help you understand that this is not a simple or inexpensive system some are trying to redesign without understanding the impact of these changes will have. You also will hear a lot this session about unredeemed deposits, salvage values, and cross-border trafficking of containers that find their way into the deposit system. First, I'd like to address the huge myth that wholesalers are making a fortune from unredeems. I go back to my opening remarks and also add that, yes, the last couple of years we have experienced higher than normal unredeemed containers. I have also heard much conjecture about the reasons, such as the nickel isn't worth what it used to be, reverse vending has scared people away who don't like the machines. On average, the recycling rate from 1990 through 2006 is 96.6%. Our highest year was 1992, where we redeemed 103.4% of sales, and our lowest was 2005 at 90.08%. These numbers are based what was sold into the stores we service and what was redeemed from those same stores. And it was also compiled by PricewaterhouseCoopers. Hopefully you can see that the total picture cannot be seen in a very small window. We can all agree that nickel isn't worth what it used to be, but when you double the value from a nickel to a dime of close to a billion containers, there's a $50 million liability sitting out there. Many factors can contribute to lower deposit redemption, a change in population to people from outside the state not familiar with bottle bills. They don't bother to read their gross. They just think it's part of the cost of the product. Highest aluminum salvage values we've ever seen. The latter can change in a very short period of time. If salvage values fall like they have in the past, the nickel again will become king. Has our system changed over 35 years? Yes, it has, and in so many ways, but it has been transparent because the wholesalers and grocers have made those changes and it did not require public funding to accomplish them. Now to compare our system to the two closest to Oregon, which are British Columbia and California. There are some stark differences and they're not all good. In BC, the deposit values will vary by container size and range from a nickel to 20 cents, and have handling fees that range from 0 to 4 cents per container. The Encore Pacific, the steward of Canada's system, annual report for 2004 stated that the return rate for 04 was 74.5% and added, "We believe we are bumping up against a recovery rate ceiling." In California,
and I'll need you, if you could, to wrap it up pretty quickly so we can get to the rest of the folks.
I'll be done.
Okay.
In California, where the recycling rate is somewhere near 60%, multiple authorized redemption center operators have been indicted and are facing long prison terms for fraud involving tens of millions of dollars against the redemption system. Hardly seems worth it when you consider in Oregon our recycling rate is higher, the consumer pays no handling fee, and no taxpayer dollars are used to make it work. Thank you.
Okay. Felonies are always a good and important point to end on, aren't they? Glad you got that in.
That's good. Got it covered.
Yeah, okay, good. Go ahead.
Chair Vaki and Senators, I will try to be brief. I'll be under that time. I spent my evening last night till 9:45 as a school board member hearing public testimony about closing schools. So that, I think this is a fiery group. That was also. So my name is Eric Forrest. I'm speaking on behalf of the Oregon Soft Drink Association. I'm a president of a third-generation bottle bill business. During the testimony Tuesday, I heard remembrances of 1971 and family. Our family has been in the beverage distribution business for 60 years. Through the testimony, I heard of how nothing has changed in the bottle bill since 1971. Let me tell you, a lot has changed in our business as it relates to the bottle bill since 71. To illustrate those changes, let me discuss sustainability, which we heard about earlier, which I really believe is what the bottle bill is all about. The bottle bill as it stands today is a key component of what I think is the most sustainable business in Eugene, Oregon, our Pepsi franchise. I'm sure you've heard of the triple bottom line, which is the key component of sustainability, i.e. companies should be measured by people, profit, and planet. Our little business literally takes the consumer product stream from the cradle to the grave while trying to use as little of the Earth's resources as possible. We have a filling line for our soft drink PET production just one mile from our plant. The product is filled, placed in reusable plastic shells, palletized on recycled plastic pallets. We move it into our warehouse using electric pallet jacks and take it out to the customer in our fleet of trucks burning biodiesel. When the package is returned, over 82% using the DEQ numbers we talked about, they're picked up from the grocer and taken to a centralized recycling center, Broco, in Eugene. Once at Broco, the container is processed into a form that allows it to be easily recycled. Throughout this process, we pay family wage jobs with excellent benefits while keeping a healthy business going for over 60 years. I think you'll agree we have managed that triple bottom line. In my opening, I mentioned the change since 1971. Back in 71, we were using zero PET and very little metal. Over 90% of our business was in glass. As you know, glass is very little value and is very hard to recycle. The cans we were using were about twice as heavy as the cans we use today. The PET we use today in place of glass is a highly reusable commodity that in fact does have value in the recycle process. We continue to engineer PET bottles that are lighter and lighter, therefore using less energy and materials. In 1971, the cases the products went to the customer in were often made of wood, as were the pallets. Today, they are made of recycled plastic and are used over and over again. We invested with other distributors in our area in our own recycling center and helped make reverse vending machines available to our customers. These machines are there to help with the problem Senator Verger mentioned in her testimony. This recycling center processes all the bottle bill products returned in our area. This work used to be done at each distributor site and hauled on each company's truck. Now we use less fuel, less energy, with a higher level of recycling efficiency. Why all these changes? Why the sustainable business practices? Not because of regulation, but because they were good for the business, the community, and our customers. What hasn't changed? The bottle bill, or the original mousetrap, if you will. What worked in 1971 is still working today. With no cost to the citizens of Oregon, the bottle bill today results in 83% of the deposit packages being recovered. Have our lives changed much since 71? Of course they have. Think about it. No microwave, no ATM, no cell phone, no iPod, not even a remote control to switch your channel with. However, the bottle bill is still resulting in an 83% recovery rate. I've looked at the other mouse traps in Maine, California, and British Columbia. The results are the same at best or worse, with significantly more cost to the consumer. In the testimony on Tuesday, you saw the elegant simplicity of the Oregon bottle bill flowchart, much like the original mousetrap. I encourage you to look at the flow chart for the California Beverage Container Recycling Program. It looks more like the original rat's nest than a mouse trap, with all of its arrows, boxes, and bullets, not to mention its administrative costs and handling fees. It still underperforms Oregon. In closing, on Tuesday we heard from the drafter of the first bill that was proposed that the only way to improve recycling in Oregon was to throw away the original bottle bill and start over. My case to you is the current mousetrap is still catching mice. Further, it's completing its task in a sustainable, closed-loop system at no cost to its citizenry or government. To paraphrase Senator Courtney, Oregonians like to be the first or the only. I would suggest that we still have the first bottle bill and perhaps the only one that is sustainable. Thank you for this opportunity.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Murray.
Chair Avakian and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Murray. I'm Vice President for Far West Fibers, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of modernizing the Oregon Bottle Bill. I would also like to recognize the outstanding efforts of Representative Berger and Senator Berger in bringing this issue forward. Far West Fibers is a privately owned Oregon business that processes recyclable materials for over 25 years. Far West operates four recycling facilities in the Portland metro region and currently processes in excess of 40% of the curbside recyclables collected throughout Oregon, employing 90 full-time employees. Oregon's curbside recycling programs are looked on as some of the best in the nation. Per DEQ, in 1993, the amount of non-bottle bill plastic containers recycled through either curbside or depot collection programs in Oregon totaled 3,831 tons. Bottle bill plastic containers redeemed in Oregon in the same year totaled 4,184 tons. In 2005, the most recent year reported by DEQ, 9,633 tons of non-bottle bill plastic containers were recycled in Oregon. Bottle bill plastic containers redeemed in Oregon for 2005 was reported at 4,171, 13 tons less than the numbers reported in 1993. Why hasn't this redemption rate increased over time? Because people's consumption habits have changed. They drink more water and juice and fewer carbonated beverages. Better for all of us, maybe. These newer beverages didn't exist when the bottle bill passed in 1971. Additionally, people consume the vast majority of these beverages away from home. Curbside programs do an excellent job of recovering containers used at home. A modernization of the bottle bill to include these modern beverages is needed to encourage the recovery of these containers away from home. Increasing the deposit from a nickel to a dime is a part of this modernization. With the increase in bottle bill containers, it is important that we acknowledge the increased burden this would place on grocers. In new legislation, we need to establish additional venues to redeem drink containers. We have heard and understand the issues raised by the grocers. We welcome serious, positive conversation with the grocers and other stakeholders while moving forward to modernize the Oregon Bottle Bill. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Good, and thank you to the three of you. We appreciate your testimony very much. Martha Pellegrino and James Hansen. And as they're coming up, these are going to be the last two to testify today. There's a few folks on the list that we are not going to be able to get to, and I apologize for that, but we are under a time restraint. And we will be having another hearing on Tuesday, next Tuesday, and you're certainly welcome to come back then. Yeah, and then the one other, thank you, sir. And then the one other thing I just wanted to remind folks of is we will be appointing a work group to sort through the various proposals that are before the committee. And if you want to serve on that work group or be considered for it, get your name in to Sue Marshall, who is sitting just to my right, today, because we'll be choosing the work group between now and next Tuesday, and we'll let folks know then what it is. And is Mr. Hansen here? Oh, certainly.
I was recycling bottles in Kansas City, and I smell of beer and stale bottles.
Okay, well, yeah, Mr. Well, then you're fine right where you are then. All right.
I could come up there.
No. Actually, Mr. Hansen, why don't you go first, if you don't mind, and Ms. Pellegrino will finish with you.
My name is James Hansen. I'm from Mill City, Oregon, and I'm a volunteer with the San Anne Canyon Senior Center. And we process a lot of recyclable stuff, paper, pop cans, pop bottles and stuff. And this year we ran into a windfall through our Oregon Parks and U.S. Park Services and collecting beer pop bottles and plastic bottles and stuff from the park services. And it is true, a lot of people drink away from home. Then they deposit their bottles on the land, in the river, in the lakes. And so I'm in favor of the bottle bill reform, and the first thing with it is incentive. Without it, we won't have any incentive to recycle, especially when they're out in parks or out in the woods and stuff. I come along a lot of places in the woods where they've had a party or something, beer cans, beer bottles, wine bottles, plastic water bottles, all of these in our national forests, in our state forests, in our recreational areas. We recycled with mixed recycling over 500 pounds of plastic water bottles last year, and we're going to do about this or more this year. It's just a continuing increase of all of this stuff, and the incentive would be to increase the price, do the 10 cents per bottle on all liquid bottles, beverage bottles, and also a redemption center where somebody like Little League, people from Little League, nonprofit organizations do fundraising things, and most of that is through cans and bottles, and we process a lot of these bottles, and that's a boon for somebody like us, and that's an incentive for somebody like us to do this. That's pretty much all I have to say is the curbside service is great, but people in their homes, they separate their beverage bottles out, and they either donate them to charitable organizations or they take them back and redeem them. For people like us, the redemption center is the better of the two evils.
Well, we appreciate you making the effort to get down here and tell us about it. Thank you. Ms. Pellegrino?
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martha Pellegrino. I am representing the City of Portland's Office of Sustainable Development today. I think perhaps I can beat Mr. Tucker's lightning speed testimony. I have submitted written testimony. I would just like to make the point that the Portland region currently recycles 1 million tons of paper, plastic, glass, metal, and yard debris per year. City of Portland's share of that is approximately 600,000 tons for a recycling rate of 63%. Our Office of Sustainable Development has a goal of achieving a rate of 75% by the year.
Let me interrupt you for just a minute. I just want to thank Representative Berger for joining us at the dais today, and we'll continue next Tuesday. You're certainly welcome then.
We hope to achieve a rate of 75% by the year 2015, and we believe that the modernization of the bottle bill is a very important step toward that. I would also echo Mr. Kyler's comments on the elements of a successful bottle bill, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Very good. Thank you. And with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 481, and we are adjourned.